Portions of the show may be previously recorded. Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, we are going to go to the mailbag and got some very interesting type of emails and articles that people want me to talk about today. So we want to get on those right away. The first one here is a Wall Street Journal article. And let me preface this a little bit. For the last 4 weeks or so, ever since the Fed started raising interest rates, which was really about 8 weeks ago, we've been discussing whether or not prices would fall because of this or not. That was, you know, really the $24,000 question. Is that going to happen or not? And I was explaining to you that all of the real estate brokers I was talking to were saying, no way, the prices were not going to go down. And there were article after article after article after article from brokers, real estate brokers, from major firms that were trying to put a happy face on the fact that the interest rates were going up and it wasn't going to be a problem. They're in a seller's or coming out of a seller's market. And when you're in a seller's market, brokers are working for the sellers. And they've got all this product and inventory that they're trying to sell for what I would call unrealistic prices, okay? Prices that are above and beyond what they should be selling for. But that's because there's this pent-up buying demand, this irrelevant enthusiasm that just says, hey, buy, 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 buy. When all of a sudden you pull the plug out of that, then you got to go back to looking at the numbers and see if the purchase really makes sense, then you got a problem. So what makes the market go back and do that? And that's really the mortgage companies. And the mortgage companies start forcing the buyer to prove that they can actually pay the mortgage. Whereas when you're in this exuberant, euphoric state of ever-rising prices, the mortgage companies realize they can't really make people prove it. They got to just go by the fact that they believe that the thing's going to be worth more tomorrow, and that even if they have to take it back, they're going to be okay because the property be worth more than what it was before. Well, this has come to a screeching halt. And the thing that is bothering most people is not that it's coming to a halt. It's coming to a screeching halt. In other words, it's turning around faster than you ever would have thought possible. Now, I read you an article about a week and a half ago, where a guy was talking about, well, everybody is going to get on the phone and start screaming and yelling that the market's crashing, the market's crashing, the market's crashing, and they're going to try to create their own unreal belief system out there that the world is really going to crash and so on and so forth. And the point that he was making was is that it's not real. And when you really get out there, the prices are still going to be strong, and you're going to see that you can't go out there and get a better deal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's been a couple weeks now. The one economist that I read to you said that, well, in 6 to 8 weeks, the brokers will come around and start seeing the reality is that the interest rates are affecting the prices. Whew. That's a lot to come out of my mouth without a breath. So having said that, we are now at that point where it isn't 6 to 8 weeks to get there. It's been 2 or 3 weeks to get there. And they're just boom, wanting to get it done. It's just extremely exciting for buyers, and that's what we are. We're basically buyers. It's extremely exciting for buyers as to what we can buy stuff for and where the market's going to in this situation. So this first article is by Wall Street Journal. It's titled, Commercial Property Sales Slow as Rising Interest Rates Sink Deals. And let me read you the highlights on this thing. As I'll go ahead and read this here, it says, commercial real estate is showing the first signs of cooling in more than a year. Disrupted by rising interest rates that are already causing some deals to collapse. So literally, I've already seen many, many deals that were in the middle. They were already either negotiated or even in contract where people have backed out of the deals. And I've even had one myself that I was in the middle of a negotiation. We were about ready to go to contract, and I backed out of it just simply because I could see that I'll get a better price in 30 days from now. The next paragraph says property sales were $39.4 billion in April, which was down 16% compared with the same month a year ago. According to MSCI, Real Estate Assets, the decline followed 13 consecutive months of increases. So think about this. The real estate brokers are seeing 13 consecutive months of increases. And then, boom, a 16% decline. And I think the world is starting to get it now. Well, the world is getting it. I think real estate brokers are going to start to get it. Now, it goes on and says in this article, and I'm skipping a bunch of this because it's pretty much what we've already talked about, and it's a lot of its history and rhetoric and so forth. So we're going to go down to this next part. It says, sales of retail properties were up in April, okay? The fourth consecutive month that U.S. households boosted spending, while the apartment building sales continued to rise due to strong tenant demand and landlords' ability to raise rents. But analysts and brokers said activity in even these sectors may be slowing as rising interest rates keep some investors from making competitive offers. Now, let me break that down for you. The first paragraph is actually in contradiction to the second paragraph. Or the first sentence, it's in contradiction to the second sentence in the same paragraph. The first sentence is saying, look, the prices in April went up. Why did they go up? Well, because rents are going up. And if rents are going up, profits are going up. And if profits are going up, the value of the property is going up. So prices went up in April. Now, pulling down all that profitability, though, is this concept of interest rates rising. And let's say that before you can have any actual price drops, you've got the fact that rental rates continue to climb, making the value of the property more. For interest rates to have an effect, it has to first slow it from being worth more to just being worth even. And then it can work on making it worth less. So I've always said that when you're in the stock market, it's like having a gun to your head, and the day the market changes, you pull the trigger and boom, you're dead. But in the real estate market, it's like being on a train track and someone saying, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to kill you with my train. You go, you can't kill me with your train. I'll just get off the track or I'll move. And that's what's happening right now. Is that the people that can hear the train coming are getting off the track. They're getting out of deals. People that have got bad deals, they're selling them, getting rid of them. People that are getting into deals that they think are a little too high priced or the terms are bad, they're getting out of those deals. Moving on, though, it talks about the next thing that they're going to start worrying about is the economy, because they're looking into a possible recession. And as a recession comes up, you've got additional problems, one of which is people not having jobs as they start to lay people off. And there's been a lot of companies out there that have already started laying people off. You've got lower wages possibly, although we haven't seen that yet and doesn't seem to be a problem. But you've got just less economic activity. And as this less economic activity occurs and we go further into recession, that's going to be another reason for buyers, real estate investors, to not want to buy. They don't want to buy going into a recession. Now, let me tell you, myself, I do like buying into a recession. I like buying into the jaws of danger, because when you come out the other side, which you always will at some point, you will have gotten a good deal on it. It goes on and says, interest rates are considerably higher than the 10-year mortgage was just a year ago, but it's nowhere near the interest rate level that it was back in 2019. And if the Fed continues to raise these interest rates up and back towards the levels they were in 2019, it doesn't really see that as a problem, because that's what they would call really normal interest rates. But for some investors that have been paying too much for the properties they've been buying in the last 6 months to a year, they've bought at such a high price that the interest rate is going to end up being higher than their profit. So in other words, let's say I have $1,000 rent, I have $500 worth of expenses, I have $500 worth of income, but I have $500 or $600 worth of interest payments. Now I've got a negative cash flow situation. And that's what's happening. So the cap rates on these apartment complexes have gotten down as low as 3.5% to 4%, even 4.5%. Well, when the interest rates get back to 5 and 5.5, you've actually got a negative cash flow situation. And what we'd call a negative arbitrage. In other words, normally we have a positive arbitrage. We go out there and we buy a property, and we buy it at let's say a 6 cap rate, and our mortgage payment's 4 cap rate. For the 80% of the money that we're using to buy it, which is mortgaged, we're only paying 4 and receiving 6 in income on that. So we're actually making 2% on the money that we're borrowing. That's called a positive arbitrage. But in this situation, people are going to end up with a negative arbitrage on the money they're borrowing. That is going to make it almost impossible to sustain a profit in the overall investment. So at this point, we're starting to see investors walk away from deals. They're walking away from deals that are already in place. In other words, in contract. And they're putting people in a situation where they have to make the decision. Do I want to lose my earnest money, or do I want to go on with a deal I know is a bad deal that might take me down, right? And a lot of people are walking away from contracts they're already into. Even more so, people like myself. I was in a deal just a week ago where we had agreed to terms. We were getting ready to have the attorneys write up the contract, and I just pulled the plug. And I renegotiated the deal, and the guy agreed to the renegotiation. And then I got more information about right then people were starting to agree that prices were going to fall. And I did like everybody else. I said, you know what, let's just put this deal on hold for a while. I can wait a couple weeks. I can wait a month, find out how this all shakes out, see if this thing is really going to change or not. And so I just walked away from the deal. Now, if people keep backing out of deals, and if people keep walking away from deals, and if buyers are being very cautious about the deals they're willing to sign up for, that in itself is going to make sellers fearful and start negotiating for better prices and terms. It's just the way it is. Sellers are going to become more likely to be willing to give up concessions, more likely to be willing to lower their price, more likely to be willing to fix things, you know, give you more information. Before you ask them, let me have your financial information, you go, yeah, I don't really want to give it to you. And the banks require you to have it now. And so what happens? The deals aren't going to get done. And when the deals don't get done, then the prices start to go down. So there you have it. We're in that situation there where we're looking at the marketplace starting to change. Now, here's where I have to insert some information between articles. And that is, what you don't want to believe is that the market's falling off a cliff. Because it is not falling off a cliff as of yet. And it's very possible that if the Fed gets this right and just increases the interest rates the right amount at the right pace, they will slow the inflationary process without wiping out the economy. Now, if they're wrong and they miss it and they wipe out the economy, then all bets are off. Then we're back to the 2008 era, except for this. In 2008, when all this stuff went crashing down, there was way too much real estate. There was way too much debt. And so the mountains of over-leveraged real estate, of which there was way more of it out there than we really needed, made the whole thing come crashing down. Right now, there is not too much real estate out there in the marketplace. In fact, we are way behind the curve on housing. We need massive amounts more housing than what they have under construction right now. And it doesn't look like they can get it constructed because of the cost of land, the cost of materials, the cost of labor. So it isn't going to get constructed in a timely manner. And the banks have been very good at not over-leveraging their positions. And because of these particular pieces and these changes, from where we're sitting right now, we don't see the 2008-type collapse. Now, when we come back from break, I'm going to talk to you about another economist and an interesting point of view that he has that I think really sheds some great light on the other side of this story. We'll be right back with the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
To creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Well, one thing it has meant for us, and we have to compliment you. You've given us our time back. And I say our time because we got married 33 years ago, and we got married in July. Do you know why? Well, that was before I met Lifestyles. I used to work for Ford Motor Company. And with Ford Motor Company, I was in the automotive division. They have shut down during July, the first 2 weeks of July.
So you had to wait for a shutdown to get married?
Yes.
He actually.
Whoa, that's dedication there.
He made me change our wedding date. It was supposed to be June 15th, and I changed.
Wow, that's amazing.
So if I had been in Lifestyle, I could have gotten married when I wanted to.
And the ring would have been bigger.
Thank you.
Ready to get your time back like Vivian and Cornell? Register for the free online workshop at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today we're in the mailbag and I'm going through articles that people have sent me. Mostly the concern is about where's the economy going, how's it going to affect real estate investing. The next article I have here is from the Linneman Letter, and this is an economist that's really big in real estate investing here. We follow him quite closely. And he's got a completely different take on this economic situation. I've just got to share this one with you because I thought it's profound. It's interesting how some people see the world completely differently than everybody else. So let me read this to you because I can't do it justice, quite honestly. And I quote, we support raising interest rates, not as a cure for inflation, but as a way to more efficiently allocate capital. Raising interest rates to fight inflation caused by widespread supply shortfalls is a great policy mistake. This is because higher rates cannot make up for floods, hurricanes, wars, or shutdowns. Our longtime readers know that we long argue that the Fed should have raised interest rates more aggressively during the financial crisis recovery. A major problem with low interest rates is that large borrowers, especially the U.S. government, experience little to no cost associated with spending the free money. So in other words, what he's saying is when you start letting people have free money, they start doing stupid stuff with it. The government does stupid stuff with it, and investors do stupid stuff with it. And it puts our economy way out of whack. That's where we get the inflation. That's where we get the recession. All of it comes from free, cheap to free money. He goes on, and this is a social comment, says the economic inefficiency of zero interest rates is understood by the fact, no, it's underscored by the fact that robbing retirees of income on their lifetime savings cannot be a sensible economic policy, as robbery is a non-voluntary exchange, and giving free money to the 335 physically irresponsible members of Congress that define the spending of the world's largest borrower cannot be smart either. If something that is not economically free is made free, it will be overused. This is not to say that the higher interest rates will make Congress financially responsible, but it will help. So there you go. Congress is out of control. Why? Because nobody's questioning where the money's coming from. They're just printing money. It's free money, and it's destroying our economy. It's destroying our country. It's destroying our political landscape. It's destroying people's lives, retirees. Most people that retire live on interest from savings accounts, from bonds, and from CDs. When you take interest rates down to almost zero, those vehicles were paying these retirees next to zero money, while Congress kept voting itself increases in income, salary, profits, stock market gains. They were robbing the poor retirees. Now, this is real easy to understand, guys. This is theft from our seniors. Goes on. Many pundits warn of economic meltdown as interest rates rise. So there it is. We've got an economic meltdown coming because the problem is not just the interest rates and the free money. The problem is also associated with supply curve problems. But contrary to the Keynesian theory, artificially low rates inhibit growth by misallocating capital. Somewhat higher rates will better allocate capital and fuel, not dampen growth. This is the reason we are not concerned that the Fed raising rates will harm growth. Quite the opposite. It will make it grow. So in other words, I'm sitting here, I'm a normal human being, and I'm not going to get starved out by the recession. I'm not going to get starved out by this inflation. Am I happy that they're raising interest rates? Absolutely. Why? Because it's going to make our economy more stable. What is that going to mean to me as a business person that owns 25 different companies, 27 different companies? It means the economy is going to be more stable. This is a good thing that they're doing this. The Fed will move interest rates towards levels which prevailed in 2019. Still, historically low interest rate environment. That is as economy-wide supply and demand balance moves back to normal, a la 2019, and economic growth moves the economy closer to its potential, interest rates will normalize. Most of the rate hikes that will occur this year are already priced into the market, and since the economy's resources allocated will improve as money is no longer free to borrow, the economy will grow unless the Fed raises rates too high. So there's the warning. Raising interest rates is good, unless they go too far. And if they go too far, there's where the recession kicks in, right? It goes on, last paragraph. Those most at risk of rising interest rates are heavily leveraged financial traders. Remember that rates will not rise overnight, but rather over the course of a year. Even if the nominal short-term rate rises to 2.5, the real short-term rate will still be negative, as growth will continue. Only as Fed rises the short-term interest rates will, well above the market rate, will growth be harmed. We do not know exactly what the inflection point is, but we believe that it's above the current level. So in other words, they can keep raising interest rates as long as they don't raise them to the point where they curb the economic growth. When interest rates go up faster than the economic growth goes up, then you create massive, massive recession. So my friends, as you can see, as we look through this, for those of us that are normal people, have normal lives, have savings, have investments, having the interest rates go back up is good for us in many, many reasons. One, a more stable economy, less stealing from our seniors, more realistic use of capital in our society. Take away the money from the government and the congressmen and the senators who spend it all on really bad ideas and bad things. All these are good things for us, right? But throw in the fact that prices come back down to realistic prices again. That in itself, for us as real estate investors, is really the positive point to all this. If we can get those rates back down, or get the interest rates up high enough to get the prices back down to what would be normal, then we'd be in good situation. So what's normal, Dell? Well, what's normal is when the cap rate, the rate of return we earn on the investment, if it were paid all cash and there was no debt. In other words, rent in, expenses out, net profit. If our net profit return, cap rate, if our cap rate was back to where our mortgage rates were 2 points below our cap rate, then we'd be back in a normal situation. So we've got to get those cap rates up, and we've got to get those mortgage payments down. Now, right now, the mortgage payments are going up. So what does that mean? That means the cap rates have to go up. And the reason why the difference between the cap rate and the mortgage payment is becoming so slim, and why the net profit after mortgage is so slim, is because there's no place to invest in the market that's as appreciated, as desired as real estate investing. And hence what's happening is money's moving out of all these other sectors and coming into real estate. And not only that, it's coming out of all these other countries and coming into the U.S. This is still the most sought-after investment in the world, U.S. real estate. And if you don't have some, you don't have a part of the really only inflation hedge that there is. Because as all these prices go up and all the rents go up and all the values go up, people still have to have a place to live, whether they're buying it or whether they're renting it, whether the prices go up or not. We own the most valuable asset on earth. Why? Because they're not making any more of it. This third article that we're covering today is interesting because it's from Kiplinger, and it's sort of a contra real estate article. It's written by a gentleman by the name of Eric Robrier or something like that, certified financial planner. And that and about $5 get you a cup of coffee. I've always asked this question, you know, what do you name the last guy in their class? What do you call the last guy in your legal class? Counselor? What do you call the last guy in your medical class? Doctor? What do you call the last guy in your financial planner class? CFP, Certified Financial Planner. Doesn't mean they know anything. But this guy's article actually has some merit in that it's an argument that I don't agree with. But some of the stuff that he makes point of is logical if you don't know what you don't know. And so his basic argument is that people talk about passive investments in real estate, and he says there's no such thing. Let me see if I can get an introductory paragraph that might outline it for you. While real estate can be a good investment, that statement comes with a laundry list of caveats. All of the ifs and buts that surround it mean that investing in real estate, especially with the goal of generating passive income, is more of a myth than a viable strategy for most people who simply want to easier or more exciting way to grow wealth than investing in the stock market for a long term using a diversified portfolio. So there he is, a certified financial planner. He's telling you that real estate investing as a way to get better returns, as to be passive, it's really just a myth. So let's go on and look at his arguments as to why that is. Argument number one. Managing rental properties takes a lot of work. When people tell you they want to invest in real estate, here's the scenario they typically envision. They receive a rent check the first of the month, each month, which is much bigger than the mortgage payment on the property. They then use the check to pay the mortgage, cover all the costs of the home ownership, and then pocket the profits. It is possible to locate, buy, and manage a rental property that allows this dream scenario to come true, but it's not for everyone, and it's not nearly as passive as an endeavor as many would imagine. Okay, then he goes on, and he says, here's all the things that you have to do. So this guy is talking about the fact that there's all these things you have to do to be a real estate investor that are really not as passive as what, you know, you're being led to believe. And he lists these down here as advertise to find tenants, show the property to interested parties to rent, vet applicants to ensure they're qualified, update and improve the property so you continue to attract high-paying tenants, respond to maintenance requests and coordinate repairs, and manage all the financial obligations, including paying the bills and handling security deposits, et cetera, et cetera. So is the guy right? He's absolutely right, to some extent. Let's talk about the reality here. The reality is there's three different types of real estate investing. The first one is a small IRO, which IRO stands for independent owner, where you own like a rental house or a duplex or a fourplex or a small apartment complex, a couple of units, and you basically are involved doing all that stuff. Beautiful part is it's not very much stuff to do. I could own a rent house, put a tenant in it, and if I did it all correctly, and that's what you're coming to Lifestyles to find out how to do, if you do it all correctly, you're going to have less than a couple hours a year of invested time into each and every property you own. Very simple to do. I owned over 100 properties myself. I ran them all by myself. It was no big deal, okay? The second type of property is a medium to large IRO, which is when you own an apartment complex that has a full staff. And you don't do anything. The staff does everything. You just manage the bills and so forth, and maybe you even have them pay the bills or somebody else pay the bills, and you really don't have to do anything other than make decisions. Now, if you're smart, you probably call the apartment complex on a daily or every other day basis and say, hey, are you still there? And hello, are there any problems or whatever? But man, that's, you know, an hour a day at the most, if that even. So really, that doesn't come into play. And then if you got a large apartment complex, your third way is not being IRO, to be a passive. And if you're a passive, you don't do any of that because there's a person in your place that is operating the property and they do everything. So you really don't have to do any of those deals that they're talking about. He goes on and says, just because it's a house doesn't mean it's a good rental property. In other words, everybody's trying to take the houses they live in and turn them into rental properties, or take a vacation homes and turn them into rental properties. And in this case, he's absolutely right. Not every home was born a rental home. There are certain types of homes we buy that make great rental properties, and there are other types of properties that are terrible rental properties. So he's absolutely right on this. And again, this is what we teach you to do. So we teach you to buy the right property in the right location, set it up the right way, and operate it the right way. And if you do all of those things correctly, then you're going to have a very good result and a very good taste about what happens in real estate investing. You just have to make sure that you do them all the right way. And if you do them all the right way, then he's wrong. This really can be a very passive experience and make you a lot of money doing it. All right, moving on. I got two more emails here. The first one is that it says, my main issue is I want to buy an apartment complex zero down. The answer to that's real simple. can't do it. There's going to need to be some money down. The days of nothing down, even on houses, is long past us. Could someday in the future come back, but it's not going to be there for apartment complexes. And the other one is, if I have a 24-unit or I have a 64-unit apartment complex and all things were equal, which one would be more profitable? And the answer is, all things are never equal. If they were all equal, then both properties would make the same amount of money. But the very fact that nothing is ever equal is the answer to the question, and it's the ability to be able to evaluate the differences between the two, where in case one might be more profitable, be the small one, and another time the more profitable one might be the larger one. It really just comes down to which deal is a better deal. And that's something you can't just put your thumb up in the air and let the wind blow on and go, well, that's smaller, that's probably better. Or, that's larger, it's probably better. That's not really the case. So you need to get some information before you make those kinds of decisions. For the rest of you out there, keep this in mind. It's not the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.